Blog Talk Radio.
Of Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon. Once again, I'm joined by our celebrity co-host, my brother, partner, friend from Glendale, Arizona, Peter Fowler. He's on the line right now, and we've got a lot of stuff to discuss and to kind of hash our way through this this episode. It's a pleasure to be with you on this March 22nd, 2010. Most places on the East Coast are finally experiencing a break in the frigid, cold winter that we've experienced, and it's been an even colder season in terms of social policy and the social fabric of America. And you know, just last night, you know, there's the historic health health reform vote, you know, that passed in the House, and so many in the liberal media and so many liberals are touting this as a great achievement. And it's just, to me, it's just kind of, you know, I'd like to just, you know, start this show before I even actually talk about our guest. We're going to have a guest, a comrade of mine, one of the sickest MCs that you're to ever hear. His name is Capital X. He's a Brooklyn-born Puerto Rican rapper, and he's going to be talking about his latest album. He'll be calling in at about 7:30, and we're going to be having a discussion with him, playing some of his tracks and really getting into a nice dialogue in terms of why he is such an outspoken advocate against the death penalty in this country, against capital punishment, against the prison injustice system that looms heavy on American soil and looms heaviest on black and brown skinned people. But before we kind of get to that, it's just like I said, it was a huge vote last night, and you know, I can see where some folks whose point of reference is at a certain place, you know, would see this bill possibly as being good. It, you know, it's supposed to cover, you know, up to 32 million extra folks. However, there's a mandate that folks have to buy into private insurance that are owned by some of the most disgusting, wretched corporations to ever exist on planet Earth. You know, if it was up to me, I would dissolve every single last one of them. And but you know, we live in the capital of the capitalist world, and that is the United States of America. If there was a capital for the capitalist world, it is the United States of America. And because of that, corporations and capitalist rapacious greed will always benefit before the people. It's you know, in this country, it's profit before the people, not people before the profit. And so it's, you know, it's to me, it's the corporations won big time. They won big time yesterday. They won huge. Where this dialogue and so-called debate, you know, started over a year ago. Single payer was something that was on the tongues of so many folks. That got watered down to a public option. The public option has been removed. This bill that passed didn't have the public option. Yeah, there's all these little candies and things that they threw in there, you know, to really really get folks excited, you know, sooner rather than later. And like I said, I can understand people being happy, excited to a certain extent, but you know, but that's because the corporate media does not weigh things in a proper pendulum. It doesn't weigh things. There's no equilibrium in terms of the information that folks should get, and so they don't understand, you know, how this thing still falls far behind the other countries, the other industrialized countries of the world, and their and even many developing nations such as Cuba. This still is a healthcare system, even with the passing of this, is nothing compared to Cuba's, nothing compared to Venezuela's, nothing compared to Canada's, nothing compared, obviously, to the NHS system in Great Britain. And you know, some people may be listening right now and saying, "Oh man, why is this guy just, you know, this is a major vote. Why is Solomon and why is Peter about to, you know, go on this, you know, the healthcare bill and this, that, and the other? This is monumental. Nothing like this has been passed. No significant legislation has been passed, you know, in the last 40 to 50 years. Why are we going? Because our standards are a little bit higher. And our point of reference has taught us that, you know, not to to sing Sweet Dixie," which is a repulsive song I wouldn't be singing. I'm sorry I didn't use that reference. But you get my point. It's to, you know, has taught us that, you know, based on our point of reference and understanding the grand scheme of things, this falls far short of what should be, what should have been passed, what could have been passed if we lived in a different society, if we didn't live in a this autocracy that we live under. it should have been something much, much more. And so, I'll end there, and I'll let Peter give his two cents. But folks, it's really important that you understand, this is a win-win for the corporations. You're being mandated to, and I know there's a lot of folks out there that need health insurance, and God bless them. And hopefully this at least will provide some temporary relief. But this battle should not stop here. It should be something push, and those MFers, I'm talking about those Democrats, those MFers who were touting single payer, over a year ago and jumped off board like the wimps that they are, that jumped off board and abandoned that ship, like the wusses they are. They should be held accountable because they failed to fight for something that you deserved, that you deserve. You deserve much more than this, what was delivered last night. You deserve much more. That's the point I'm trying to say. Is like, I understand that, and I hope that the relief is able to save some people's lives, to give them, to assuage, any kind of physical difficulties people are going through. Yes, it's going to provide, it's 32 million folks. But there are about 15 to 17 million that are going to be left out, and they shouldn't be left out. Those 15 to 17 million shouldn't be left out, and you shouldn't be mandated. No one should be mandated, whether it's government subsidies that you get or not, shouldn't be mandated to pay a nickel, a dime, a penny into United Healthcare, into Cigna, into any of these, and Blue Cross Blue Shield, any of these. Disgusting healthcare, health insurance corporations at all. So, Pete, you have a very salient, story that you talked about a few shows ago based on, your physical difficulties and, I don't know if you want to, give a quick recap of your personal story and the situation that you're in right now, based on the fact that you're not living someplace else, or I should say the situation you're in, and the assistance that you don't get based on the fact that you're not living in a different country, and if you can also tie within that your feelings about this bill.
Yeah, absolutely, I got strong feelings about this bill, this process, because I do have a personal invested interest in the availability of health care in this country, availability of it for me personally. I do have a health condition. It's a chronic condition, something I've dealt with most of my adult life. And I had insurance up until a couple of years ago, and I was unceremoniously eliminated from the package that I had. I received a letter on October 30th. This is a few years ago, but it was Monday, October 30th, when I got a letter. The letter told me that as of November 1st, I would have no more benefits. So I got 24 hours notice that I was being completely cut off from my benefits. And when I looked into it, I asked, what's going on here? And they had concocted a story and said that they were missing some documentation from my file that necessitated me being eliminated. Long story short, the paperwork was there. When I finally talked to a supervisor of a supervisor who could give me some straight answers, they looked through my file and said, oh, this paperwork is there. And I said, well, so that means I'm back on the policy, right? And they said, no, once you've been terminated, you have to go through the appeal process, which I did, and, they decided that they didn't want to spend the money on me. So I've been a victim personally of that, and then I applied for some benefits just last year. I was turned down. They told me reapply. Most people get turned down. So I reapplied again this year. They said, oh, well, this is the same application from last year, so you're ineligible. So in other words, the insurance companies simply do not want to extend benefits to those people who really need them, individuals like myself who need to have health care on a regular basis and need to have prescription medication. If I can't afford it, I'm just out of luck. And so I've been following this very closely, and it's not, and what has been passed, the farce of a bill that was passed last night, is not going to provide the kind of care and coverage that so many people that are in situations like mine are going to need. And you know, you talk about some of the provisions that will go into effect, and it may be beneficial to some people. I won't rule out that possibility, but the fact is that most of those provisions don't go into effect until the year 2014. So even if I were eligible for some of the provisions in this bill, what do I do for the next 4 years? What do people like me do for the next 4 years to deal with my situation? And so what we're seeing is a windfall for the insurance companies, for the pharmaceutical companies, and we are seeing once again an anti-democratic process being pushed through Congress in this country. When I mean anti-democratic, what I mean is the will of the majority of the people in this country is not being served, is not being administered. That's what democracy is about, the rule of the majority will. And virtually any independent and objective polls have indicated and still do that most Americans, the majority of Americans, are in favor of a single-payer, non-private, not-for-profit healthcare system. Even most physicians, some surveys indicate as many as 65% of physicians favor a program like that. So we are seeing another anti-democratic, pro-big business, pro-corporate, pro-profit piece of legislation that's going to have devastating effects for a lot of people who are in situations like myself, but it's going to be a windfall for these corporations. So we're witnessing a real farce, a real miscarriage of legislation.
Right. Without a doubt, man. Without a doubt. And I just hope the true progressives, continue to push this. You know, as I know you and I will continue to speak of the top of the small soapboxes that we're provided, and to hold forth and to continue to the past semester we held a healthcare forum, where I work, and invited students and community members to come out, and so these things have to continue to be pushed and to be supported by a number of folks, especially for those of us that know that this, as Peter said, falls way below the standards of what folks, should be given in any kind of semblance of a democratic society. We know that we don't live in a democratic society in America, but that's what we have to continue to fight for, is a truly democratic society. And in a truly democratic society, in a truly just society, these are the things that are afforded. These are the things that are afforded to people, because this is one of the inalienable rights that human beings, all human beings, should be afforded, and that's quality health care. So, those of us, all of us, including myself, we need to continue to do what we can to push it. There's so many different issues. It's sometimes it feels overwhelming that you're spread so thin, but, even if it's just educating your neighbors, it's vastly important, because there's a lot of folks whose point of reference, as I said before, has been purposely put in a very dark place, so that they don't understand what they are not getting, what they should be getting, what they deserve. And so when you throw them something, you give them just a little bit of light, that to them is huge, even though the room should be completely illuminated. But so it's that kind of information that really we need to provide them. And hopefully those folks that are listening today will send this link off to their comrades. And so I want to play this one clip before Capital X comes on. Like I said, Capital X will be joining us for a very, very in-depth discussion around him, who he is, his work, his experiences, the death penalty in this country, the prison industrial complex in this country, the criminal injustice system that looms heavily upon the communities and the backs of black men, black women, Latino women, Latino men, from stolen coast to stolen coast, from artificial border to artificial border. And speaking about borders, I'd like to play this clip that has a lot to do with a country that I mentioned before, in terms of their healthcare far exceeding that of the U.S.'s. And these folks have been victim to an imperialistic, very much white supremacist embargo for the last several decades. You know, so I'd like to play this clip on Cuba, and then we'll have a brief conversation about that on the other end.
Late last year, a group of 60 prominent African Americans circulated a letter denouncing racism in, of all places, Cuba. I say, of all places, because almost any other country on the planet would be a better target than Cuba for a scathing and very public racial critique by African Americans. The letter claims that Cuba treats its black population with callous disregard. It is true that lines of color continue to exist in Cuba 50 years after Fidel Castro proclaimed the triumph of the revolution. Cuba has once been described as the most racist country in Latin America, a Spanish slave colony later subjected to 60 years of U.S. occupation and domination. It would be idiotic to think that such deep layers of racial oppression could easily be peeled away or made to disappear by decree. But Cuba has made miraculous progress, helped in great measure by the fact that so many of its most racist citizens moved to Miami. Cuba's solidarity with African liberation is unequaled among nations, both militarily and in support of African civil society. Cuba has offered its life-saving medical services to peoples of all nations, including the United States. And Cuba has been a haven, a home in exile, for black American freedom fighters since the early days of the revolution. So why would a celebrity list of black Americans single out Cuba for special criticism? They have allowed themselves to become tools of U.S. foreign policy in the age of Obama. The signatories include Dr. Ron Walters, a veteran activist and distinguished political scientist at the University of Maryland. In an article explaining his actions, Dr. Walters himself noted that there's only a one-year gap in life expectancy between Cuban whites and blacks and mulattoes, and the Cubans live slightly longer than the average for the United States. In the U.S., whites live more than 6 years longer than blacks. Black Cubans live 5 years longer than African Americans. Dr. Walters also notes that black and mulatto Cubans graduate at higher rates than white Cubans. These kinds of data are clear indications that the Cuban racial divide is far less pronounced than in the United States. The signatories cite figures that purport to show that people of African descent are more likely to be incarcerated than whites in Cuba. But those same figures show a much lower rate of black incarceration in Cuba than in the United States, and a far lower percentage of blacks among Cuban political prisoners. Still, Dr. Walters wants to make the black condition in Cuba part of any negotiations on the normalization of relations between the U.S. and Cuba. In that statement, Walters is saying that the United States, of all nations, should negotiate with Cuba on the status of Cuba's black citizens before the U.S. lifts its illegal embargo and otherwise starts behaving like a civilized neighbor. I must assume that means the Cubans will have the same right to negotiate the treatment of black Americans, an end to mass black American incarceration, freedom for black American political prisoners, a lowering of black unemployment, and all the rest of our problems here in the U.S. But of course, Dr. Walters and the other signatories aren't suggesting that. They're just making themselves useful to the empire and saying to hell with solidarity. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
And it's, I mean, like I say it each week, please visit blackagendareport.com. That's www.blackagendareport.com. Please check them out every single week. It's very, very important. That's one of the better, you know, news places or websites that you can get critical analysis of not just domestic issues, but also global issues. But, you know, looking at the Cuba situation, you know, I've got the highest regard for Cuba, especially given the fact that the major role that they played towards, you know, helping, you know, black Africans fight for liberation in much of southern Africa, as well as Algeria, you know, but places like Namibia, places like Angola, Mozambique, obviously South Africa. I mean, these are Guinea-Bissau, Cape Verde. You know, Cuba played a major, major role. We're talking about over 325,000 troops that they sent in there to help, you know, fight off the white supremacists, you know, from the Portuguese to the nefarious, rotten white supremacists from South Africa. It was very, very important, and they, you know, without them, and that's why the first country that Mandela went to after he got out was Cuba. And I have my own criticisms of Mandela, I'm talking about post-incarceration, post-Robben Island, you know, because, you know, we look at South Africa today and the ANC and what was set up there has really continued to leave our brothers and sisters, you know, in utter poverty, living in squalid, you know, townships where you have the 10% white minority in South Africa still controlling, 85% of the arable land. But I digress. But Cuba, these folks have the audacity, Peter, to – I'm talking about, you know, these so-called black intellectuals, you know, signing this thing. We're right here in the belly of the beast. You know, you have black people who are continually content. It's a country where the average black person gets 62 cents to every dollar that the average white person gets. You know, and this is 2010. We have rampant police brutality, police terror, police murder. You know, it goes on and on and on. We have the most prison populous country in the world. And speaking of South Africa, there are more black people, black men incarcerated right now in 2010 than at the height, of apartheid South Africa. So you want to tell me, you know what I'm saying, to start, like, you know, write this? So far be it from them to actually, you know, sign a letter and send it to Congress, to the Senate, as well as the House, to send it to the White House, to say, listen, the Democratic Party and definitely not the Republican Party have nothing within their platform whatsoever that attacks institutional racism, attacks anything like that, police brutality, how blacks and Latinos are profiled in this country, the stop and frisk that we see in New York, the stop and frisk that we see in Philadelphia, and go on and on. But these folks want to write this letter. And as he said, yeah, Cuba is far from a perfect country, and yes, and they're working towards, like, bridging the racial divide that exists in that country, but they're far a lot further along those lines than we are here in the U.S. In the U.S., black people are catching hell, and I would say, dare I say, yes, worse. But the illusion that is the corporate media, the illusion that is America, that we're living in this matrix, so most people would not even think about it, and so they just want to. But those folks that are these so-called, you know, public intellectuals, they think they know the damn truth. They know the damn. They're a bunch of buffoons. They're a bunch of frauds. They're a bunch of buffoons that love to self-aggrandize themselves and publicly mentally masturbate. They're a bunch of clowns. So, anyways. Peter, what are your two cents on this?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, the United States government obviously has been ignoring throughout its entire history any reality of the institutionalized racism that this country is built on. So it's no surprise, you know, that the government now is going to continue that policy of just ignoring it and pretending that it doesn't exist. And the hypocrisy of any group within the United States to point the finger at another country, particularly another country in the Western Hemisphere, a country like Cuba, with regard to the condition of its citizens of African ancestry is staggering. It's a staggering hypocrisy. Ask this question. Let's look at it historically. Why is Cuba Why does Cuba have a high a population of individuals of African descent, or any other country in the Western Hemisphere for that matter? I mean, we've been talking about the debacle in Haiti. Why is Haiti a black nation? Why is the Dominican Republic a black nation? Why does Brazil have more blacks than any country outside of Africa? Because blacks were brought to this hemisphere as slaves by the European and American imperialist powers. It was a doctrine, an institutionalized racism of slavery that brought Africans to the Western Hemisphere and to these various countries. So, you know, to turn around and then point the finger and say, you know, there's some problems here that you all need to fix is absolutely stunning in its ignorance and its hypocrisy. And so we've really got to just reframe the question. You know, it's not even a matter of just answering the question on its face, because it's nonsensical as it is. If we really take into account all the factors, especially looking at it historically. So it's nonsense. It's utter nonsense.
Yeah, you're right, and it's just it really is. And you know, those folks, you know, like I said, far be it from them to actually go and actually have the balls to go and address their own government. You know what I'm saying? The United States government, both sides of Congress, the White House, and to demand justice for black people, for brown people in this country. Far be it from them to actually grow a set of balls and actually go do that. When you look at Katrina, all right, and you look at the human inflicted, you know, aftermath that was that, because as we know, it was the neglect that caused so much of the suffering and so much of the death post the flood, all right, of the levees after Hurricane Katrina. Okay, we saw that it took 4 or 5 days before any semblance of government intervention came there to help. But you know what? You know what? Before that, you had countries like Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. You had countries like Cuba. Cuba, you know, Cuba volunteered to send in over 1,000 medical, you know what I'm saying, and disaster relief specialists to come in. I think it was like close to 1,500, matter of fact, to come in and to assist the people in the Gulf region. And the U.S., with all their hubris, and it wasn't just Bush. Bush is the dim-witted mental midget that gets a lot of the credit for the nefarious things that were done. He was just, you know what I'm saying, what the U.S. president has become, whoever is in that office has become just basically has been the symbol for American, you know what I'm saying, arrogance, hubris, you know, imperialism, all that stuff. You know, white supremacy, institutional racism, all that stuff. And so Bush is just a symbol of that time. You know what I'm saying? But this was a government thing. There was no strong push by you know, massive push from Congress to say, no, hold up, President. No, allow them to come in there. You know, these lives are being lost. No, they gave a damn more about their political position, which is wrong, the wrong political position. But they gave them a damn more about their wrong political position than they did about those lives that were being lost. And, you know, many, you know what I'm saying, most of which were black. You had poor whites, you know what I'm saying, you had poor Latinos, you had indigenous folks that had lost their lives, and they gave a damn more about their political position than saving that. So you want to tell me, you know what I'm saying, you want to write this letter and send it around and sign it, you know what I'm saying, sign it like you're doing something, so you can get patted on the back by the corporate media. You want to get pat, so you can get patted by on the back by conservatives and liberals alike. You know what I'm saying? Who like to jump on the bandwagon and talk about, you know what I'm saying, what Cuba is not doing for black folks, but at the same time they want to sit on these damn pedestals and go to Capitol Hill each day and feel proud about themselves, while at the same time in Detroit, Michigan, or in Washington D.C., some black man or youth is being gunned down, you know what I'm saying, or in Oakland or in Louisiana. Like, come on, man. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
I digress. You know, but the question about, you know, the political expediency of it, you know, that's important. You know, that's a good point. I mean, that's what's behind all of that. And, you know, we talked about the normalization of relations with Cuba. Well, why do we even need to talk about the normalization of relations with Cuba? Well, obviously, because they're abnormal at present, and they've been abnormal since 1959. And why is that? Because of the political disposition of the United States government, because Cuba chose not to be a corporate capitalist nation in 1959, and has refused to bow to the will of the corporate capitalist hegemony of the United States. And so therefore, not only, but the United States took a political position to not just let Cuba go about its business and self-determine what it was going to do and how it was going to do its own governance and so forth. No, the United States has engaged in these abnormal economic relations, these embargoes, the attempted coups on Castro's life, repeated coups, and still, you know, the CIA has been active ever since 1959 to try to disrupt support for Castro simply because they refused to bow down and let multinational corporations come in and fleece the Cuban people. And so, you know, that kind of embargo is not just letting folks do what they want. No, that's economic violence. It's nothing short of economic violence being perpetrated on the citizens of an entire nation, in this case Cuba, since 1959. And so you look at the welfare of that state, and whether it's the conditions of black Cubans or otherwise, it has everything to do with the policies of the United States government towards Cuba's non-capitalist economic system. And again, that's also hypocritical, and it's inhumane is what it is.
Right, exactly. And you can draw a whole lot of parallels from the way black Haitians were punished, you know, for fighting for their own independence in from 1791
right.
to 1804. You can see a lot of parallels with that. The way the Cubans were punished for having the audacity to get from under the U.S. supported, U.S. backed dictatorship, you know, murderous dictatorship of Batista. And so, and here we are, and of course they slapped and the most kind of humorous thing is to see all the presidents that Castro has outlived. We do have Capital X on the line. I want to, before he, Capital X, introduce himself, I just want to say he's been a comrade, a brother of mine, you know, since I met him a few years ago when I was preparing to take some students out to Oakland, California to study the prison industrial complex. We went to San Quentin. We went out to some juvenile detention centers out there, and Capital X came down and was able to give a really nice talk and put things in perspective about his experiences being locked up in a major, you know, federal prison. And why he's a social activist, why he's anti-death penalty, and takes it beyond. He's not just anti-death penalty; he's pro-life. He's for life. And over a year ago, he walked from New Jersey all the way to Texas. He walked from New Jersey to Texas in protest of the death penalty and stopping at different Capitol houses along the way in death penalty states. Goes to Europe frequently to tour because, like most independent underground hip-hop artists, they get a lot more love overseas than they do here because the radios and TV are such a corporate monopoly. They won't play messages. They'll suppress messages of resistance, messages of empowerment from the mainstream airwaves, just not the kind of message that they want brown and black-skinned youth to hear in any shape, form, or fashion. So he tours over there a lot. He just released his last album. We're going to play a couple tracks on that. And so I just want to, he's been inspired by the likes of George Jackson. And, I just want to introduce my brother, Capital X. Are you with us on the phone?
Yeah, I'm here, brother. What's going on?
Not much, man. It's a pleasure to have you on the show again. It's been way too long. I understand you just got back from Europe. And, I'm going to play, I want to play a few of your tracks, before our time is over on air tonight. But I'd like you to open up, and if you could tell our listeners right now who you are And if you can really put in perspective, also the part that that you spoke to very brilliantly and humanly when you talk to my students and talk to them about your experience when you were locked up in a federal prison and how that really kind of shaped and changed your life and really really made you into a strong soldier to fight against the system.
Let me start off like this. And first off, I want to say what's up. You know what I'm saying, to my wifey, my C's, to all my comrades, you know what I'm saying, my AIM comrades, my AIM soldiers, my comrade-at-arms, street poet Monty Smith, you know what I'm saying, all my brothers on the row, all the lifers, and the revolutionary conscious that's out there. I want to say what's up. It's good to be here. You know what I'm saying? And just to correct you, man, I never went to federal prison. I went to state penitentiary.
My bad.
It's all right, but I have been weaved throughout the system, you know what I'm saying? I did the whole, you know, the county bids. I did the city jail bids. And then, of course, I graduated, you know, up to prisons. I've been in a number of institutions. This way, man, I've been in there long enough to see what's really going on, you know? And I believe that everything that I've went through in my life has led me to where I am today, and that's fighting for the brothers and sisters that's incarcerated, fighting for the brothers and sisters that have condemned, fighting for the brothers and sisters that is a part of the system out on the streets, because if you know, you know what I'm saying, there's a lot of brothers and sisters that's on parole, that's on probation, that's on ISP, that's on electric monitoring, all that. I'm saying I all those people, I represent those people, and I feel like everything I went through, everything I've witnessed brought me to this point right now to fight the very system feels set out to destroy me, destroys the poor. You know what I'm saying? It targets the poor, whether you're black, brown, white, yellow, or red. If you broke, it's no joke, you're going to go. You know what I'm saying? And as you've witnessed, as you've witnessed in the past, recent past, you know what I'm saying? It's not just the poor. They will target the rich if you brown, if you black. They will get you, man. They're ruthless and do not give a fuck who you are. You know what I'm saying? If they want you, they're going to bring you down. But they definitely target the poor, as we all know. So anyway, that's what I do. Saying I represent the 2.5 million people incarcerated and the 7-8 that's caught up in the web of the system, point blank range. And when it comes to the death penalty, I not only fight it for, you know, him in America, I fight for it worldwide to abolish the death penalty.
Right, right. And, you know, with that being said, I want to play one of your tracks, and I think that would be a good way to really set this off. And, there's three tracks that I had identified that I really want, but just based on what you just said, I want to, if you don't mind, if I can play a little bit of Revolutionary, and then we, you know, no you like that one?
Yeah, no doubt. That's one of my favorite tracks, man. Let me break that down real quick before you put it on, all right? Because with all Revolutionary,
right, sure.
What I Revolutionaries, I deputize listeners and crowds, you know what I'm saying, into the revolution with this song. There's a whole lot of George Jackson in the song. I talk about brutality, corruption, juvenile imprisonment, juvenile, and the death penalty. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of the words that I'm speaking in here are straight up, you know, the philosophy of George Jackson. And of course, I opened it up with none other than, you know what I'm saying, Fred Hampton speaking. You know what I'm saying? Because they killed the revolutionary, but they definitely haven't killed the revolution.
Right, definitely. All right, so that was Capital X, and you're about to hear Revolutionary. I'm going to play right now, and on the other side, we're going to continue our dialogue with Capital X and his music and his mission.
So we said, we always said, back to the body. I'm happy to
wanna leave a world liberated, free from oppression, wars and racism. I put a bullet in your brain if it'll make any difference. Dismantling colonialism and imperialism. I wanna see every proposition rotten in prison. That's not a mission statement, that's my fucking mission.
Question in regards to that song. He heard it when I sent it to him this weekend and was immediately became a fan. So, Peter,
I didn't know you had a co-defendant. Did you have a co-defendant?
Yeah, that's my partner in crime, man. We, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's my partner in crime, man. We'll be on, you know, held on trial against the U.S. government, man, for resisting, man, this capitalist regime. So, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, definitely. Guilty as charged of resistance, man. Hey, Brother X, Peter Fowler on the other end here. And I've done a lot of work in corrections, you know, so this is another issue that's, you know, close to my heart, and I've been involved in this for a long time. And
can you speak a little bit louder? I only got 40% hearing, so, and you got, like,
yeah,
that tone of voice that I can barely hear, so if you could just speak a little bit.
Yeah, bro, I'll speak up.
Hey, thank you.
All right. When I would go on the inside, you know, one of my major approaches was to try to raise a level of consciousness you know, of those who had been locked down. And, you know, obviously your story demonstrates that you went through, a conscious conversion. You know, you went in a number, and like the song says, you came out a revolutionary. So, you know, talk a little bit about that. Talk a little bit about what their process was from coming out, you know, an energized revolutionary, having that consciousness of resistance, and what, you know, what that means for you, and how that translates into getting, what the message is to others. You know, how do you process that conversion to other brothers?
All right. Well, first of all, I mean, the process was a long process. You know what I'm saying? Talking about, I mean, decades here. Because, I mean, it all started when I was 17 years old. It was the first major arrest that I went through. And of all places, I wound up on Rikers Island. I mean, of all fucking places, if y'all don't know what Rikers Island is, look it up. It's the largest penal colony in the world. It's got 10 to 11 units. One is females. They hold 16,000 prisoners at any given time. It is the city jail. But even though it's a city jail, you know, you have everything from petty thieves, petty drug dealers, all the way up to murderers up on there. So here I was, a scared, confused, you know what I'm saying, lost kid. That's what I was. And I wound up on Rikers Island. It didn't take very long for that scared, you know, confused, lost child, you know, to turn to a killer. Because I tell you what, you only have a matter of hours to decide if you are going to be, you know, eating or if you're going to eat. You know, and I'll tell you right now, I wasn't about to be eating, so I turned to a fucking beast. And you had no choice, you know. And, of course, everything I went while I was on Rikers Island, you know, was registering in my mind saying, holy shit, man, I had no fucking clue that this was going on. I had no clue. I mean, from the beginning when I got chained up to, you know, 12 other prisoners and put into a small little, you know, whatever they call a paddy wagon, little truck, off that first because I was going to the downtown shuffle. So basically I went to central booking, packed into a holding pen with like 100 to 150 brothers laying everywhere on the floor. I mean, it smelled urine. They were smoking. They were smoking weed in there. They were selling whatever they could because everybody knew where they was headed, to the rock. You know? So everything was registering. I made a promise to myself. I said, man, when I get the fuck out of here, I'm going to let it be known how they treating motherfuckers in here.
Right.
I mean, right off the bat in Central Booking, you know what I'm saying, the guards there was motherfuckers' asses, straight up. And if it wasn't with the clubs, it was definitely with, like, verbal abuse. I mean, it was just atrocious. Then off to the right I went, I'm witnessing all this. I'm saying, damn, when I get out of here, I'm definitely going to raise my voice. Of course, once I hit the streets, you know, I go back into survival mode. And you fall back into that, you know, into that track that you was in before you went in. And even though it stayed on the back of my mind, everything that I had went through, you know what I'm saying, it wasn't enough to keep the straight and narrow. So once again, I continued to go back. And I, of course, got into, I was basically on the installment payments. You know what I'm saying, that revolving door going in and out of prison. And then, of course, I couldn't just stay in New York. I had to take it over into Jersey with my family, and I started getting locked up in New Jersey, too, you know, which in New Jersey is where I really got my first official state, you know, state prison number. Prisons in the jails in Jersey are better than the ones in New York, I'll tell you right now. You know, I've seen just as many homicides inside New Jersey as I have in New York prisons, straight up. So every And then, man, I would make that promise to myself that, man, I'm going to do something about this when I get out, you know. And sure enough, every time I would forget until the very last time, that's when finally I got sick and tired of being sick and tired, you know. And what really rattled my cage was that I caught a really serious charge. I was facing 21 and a half years.
Wow.
I prayed started to work my ass off to try and do anything I can to not get this 21 years. I manipulated them in every way that I learned through my ranks coming up, you know what I'm saying, within the criminal justice system. First and foremost, it was the first time ever that my family came to get me because it was such a serious charge, and they saw that I was really serious about wanting to change my life. They came together, they chipped in with me, and we got a street lawyer, which is the first time I really had a street lawyer. And we went through, we built the defense the whole nine, and the prosecutors got a little bit shaken. They started giving me, so I started turning them down, which I know the game, you know, I ain't taking that first one. So I bounced it back like we was playing tennis till they finally offered me 5 years. Basically, I pled to 3 5-year sentences and 18-month sentence, and they ran them all together. So I basically had to do 5 years. It was a violent crime, so I had to do 85%. Those 5 years was my university time. While I was there, that's when I started to educate myself, and I started to prepare myself for the release this time. Just getting ready to take on the very beast that had consumed 27 years of my life. And anybody out there can sit there and say, well, it was your choices on the streets where you see. No, it wasn't, because I was blind and I only seen so many choices. When I was going to school, they didn't broaden my mind to see all the choices and all the opportunities that I had. My living conditions, everything about my life showed me very minimal choices. You know what I'm saying? And I think that, you know, it's a social responsibility for every child to see the choices that they have. Didn't see him till this time. So yeah, I worked my ass off, you know, and when I got out of prison, I left prison with a high school diploma, because I went back and I did the whole, you know, regular schooling and got my GED and all that. I got out, I went to college, you know, and I was like, man, I excelled in college. Here was an 8th grade dropout, got his GED in prison after not being in the classroom for 10 years. Not to brag and boast, but I excelled. And when I went to college, I was getting 4.0 GPA on the dean's list for 3 years straight. To finish my degree, I had an internship. I was tapped to work at Sony recording studios in New York City because I was taking music technology. I was accepted. I was hired on the spot, with all the recommendations straight up from my professors to the dean, and everything was good. I was hired until they did a background check, which during the interview I was 100% with them about, but the heads at the top called and said, we don't want this motherfucker in the building. So when they called me and said that I couldn't go, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? You gotta be kidding me. And let me tell you, that very day is when that it was game over. Everything flipped and I started to, you know, put together what is today. I said, this is the day I transform myself into a revolutionary and I'm gonna fight these motherfuckers. Right there. That's it. Game over. You know? Right. So 2004, the idea and the concept of 305-375, the voice of the voiceless, was born. Here we are, 2010. It's finally dropped.
Right, questions? Right. It's a long time coming, man. But
long time, man. It's a long motherfucking road. My fucking feet hurt. My back hurt. But you know what? I'm still putting work in.
Exactly.
Still putting work in.
Right. You sure are, man. And speaking of that, I just want to let folks know, if anyone wants to call in, if you have any questions, you know, by the wonders of technology, I can see that we've got quite a few listeners on tonight. If you just want to continue listening and just, you know, enjoy the conversation, enjoy the music, that's cool. But if you want to call in, the call-in number is 347-945-5191. That, once again, that's 347-945-5191. 5191. And any questions or comments to Capital X, feel free to call in. But Capital X, you mentioned a couple things that I was wondering if you could touch on. You talked about when they got in there, you talked about the guards just beating the hell out of the inmates to subdue them. And I heard you talk a few years ago when I first heard you in a public speaking format. You mentioned something that you also saw. You saw guards sedate with drugs. you know, folks that didn't, you know what I'm saying, weren't supposed to be on these drugs, but they basically, like, forced them, you know, with medication, with drugs. Can you talk about that? What happened with that?
Let me tell you something, man. Don't believe what you read, and definitely don't believe what you fucking hear. You know what I'm saying? When you go in there, if you're an 8304, which I was an 8304, which is considered a violent offender, you know what I'm saying? If you're an 8304, more than likely you're going to get put on medication. If you're problematic in any shape, you know, in any way, you're going to get medication. And if you refuse to take your medication, you know damn well there's going to be a price to pay. You're going to get your ass whooped, and you're going to get thrown in lockup. Minimum of 90 days, you know. And while you're in there, for that 90 days, you are going to take your fucking medication. You are going to take your fucking medication. Let me tell you, I went in there with a script. I went in there with a script because part of my defense is I went and I sought psychological help. First, it was court order just for the evaluation, but I went to my home because I was that desperate. I wanted to get the fuck out of the system. You know what I'm saying? So they gave me a script. I got diagnosed. They gave me a script. I went in with a mild script just to you know, cut the edge off. You know, when I felt that it was a little bit too much, I approached the nurse and I said, "Look, I need this to be, you know, down some. Maybe drop it 5 milligrams or something." What do you think they did? They increased the motherfucker. Every time I asked them to decrease it, they increased the motherfucker. So finally, I shut the fuck up because I was already to a point where I couldn't stop my hands from shaking. You know? And that was my AM medications. My PM medications, I'll tell you what, I had about 15 minutes to get to my fucking bunk. I used to take like a shot glass full of Adderall. It used to knock me on my fucking ass. You know? Rikers Island is notorious. Notorious for filling brothers up with Thorazine, man. They had those buildings filled with kids walking around like fucking zombies, and ain't nobody gonna tell me that shit ain't happening right now. It's been a while since I've been locked up, but they ain't gonna change just like that overnight. So, yeah, if you are a violent offender or very problematic, you're gonna get drugged up, man. You're gonna get drugged up, and you're gonna take your shit. I don't care how much you think you're gonna resist. You know what I'm saying? Once the Goon Squad comes and they freaking give you a couple welcome down beatdowns, you're going to take it, man. You know, because you could only take so much. It's either that or you're going to die in that motherfucking. You're going to die. Right. So, yeah, psychotropics, you know what I'm saying? Psychomeds, they definitely pump you up in that motherfucking. Hell yeah. And I'm not saying that every prisoner, but like I said, they do definitely pick out some 304s, and they definitely pick out some problematic inmates, and they'll pump you full of that shit, man. I was on that shit till the day I left, you know what I'm saying, till the day I left. And even that I'm, you know, that I fight with a chemical imbalance in my brain, I will not take no fucking meds. You know what I'm saying? There's no fucking way. It was fucking up my body. It was making my hair fall out. Making my teeth fly, I'm like, I'm not taking shit when I get out. Every time I went to see a doctor here, they read my, you know, my record, my fold, and it's like, yo, you need to be on here. I'm like, man, you even talk that shit, I will kick your fucking. I ain't taking shit.
Right.
I'm saying, so yes, it is for real. It is definitely a reality. I don't care what they fucking say. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. And X, man. You know, you just mentioned how you know you said your feet are hurting, your back is hurting, and I it made me think about the walk you did, the march you did over a year ago when you walked from New Jersey to Texas. Can you number one tell us what that's about? Because I know it had to do with your opposition to the death penalty. But why are you so opposed to the death penalty? And also to follow up, I want to know, you know, if you could tell our listeners what the prison industrial complex is and why it's such a nefarious thing in America. Because I remember when you told my students, you know, you painted a very vivid picture about what the prison industrial complex is, the corporations that were involved, everyone from Starbucks to Dell, and you painted a really bright picture. A lot of my students had no idea the magnitude of this thing called the prison industrial complex. So if you could touch on those things, that'd be great.
Sure. I mean, when it comes to fighting for the hemmed. I mean, straight up. I mean, first and foremost, when I first got out, I was just fighting for prison rights. The first thing I took aim on was, you know, the modern day slavery, because they used to work us to death when we was in there, you know. So I took to the 13th Amendment. I wanted to get the 13th Amendment changed, because the amendment, of course, you know, it abolished slavery except for those that have been duly convicted of a criminal offense. Then you could be enslaved, point blank range. So that's what I targeted. But somebody approached me and said, you know, fighting for prisoners' rights, but, you know what I'm saying, you're not fighting for the number one, you know, the biggest violation of a prisoner's right that they're doing. And I was like, what is that? And it's like, they executing me. You know, and I was like, you know, damn, that's, you know, so that's right, that my focus changed right there, because I'm like, that's like stat. You know, it's urgent. So I started to fight for the death row prisoners. I started writing some prisoners, finding out what's going on in there, how they're being treated, and I mean, the letters that I got back really touched me, and that was it. I mean, it was game. I was loaded and ready to explode. You know, I mean, first, of course, I started putting together lyrics, voicing what they were telling me. Because basically, when you ask me, you know, what I'm about, when I can sit there and say, oh, I'm a raptivist, I'm a speaker internationally, all that. Nah, all I am, man, is all I do is I channel the voices of those that are still locked up, those that are on death row, those that are in the grave, those that are serving life, you know what I'm saying, those that are suffering on parole and probation. That's what I do. I just channel their fucking voices, you know. So I started first by channeling their stories in rhymes, you know what I'm saying? But then it's like I had to take it one step further. I started to do protests. You know, I started being invited to conferences and invited, you know, to these conferences to not just speak but to perform the songs, you know, of the words from the brothers on death row. And, of course, that led up to me, you know, wanting to make it even, you know, make more noise. I'm like, man, people need to know what's going on. There's not enough talk about the death penalty. People don't know how easy it is for them to wind up on fucking death row. I mean, you know, they don't know about the exoneration rate and the type of people that were locked up and got exonerated in the first place. Just average Joes that was at the wrong place at the wrong time, you know what I'm saying, that got into the fucking hands of the, you know, of a DA that was looking to, you know what I'm saying, get a name for himself because he had a political agenda. He wanted to rise up in ranks. I mean, it's easy, real fucking easy, to wind up on death row. People needed to notice. So I looked at everything and said, you know, what we need to do is we need to shift the public's opinion with the truth. Because basically everybody that's pro-death penalty, they've been fucking bamboozled, man. They've been bamboozled to think that it's current, you know, to think that it makes them safer. You know what I'm saying? Because it ain't a goddamn thing making you safer, man. You know what I'm saying? Right. Nothing's making you safe. Not the death penalty, not all the cameras on the fucking corners, not giving up our fucking rights, because we had all that shit in place, cameras, high security alert and all that, you know, and that brother went right into, you know, into a Virginia Tech and blew away. How many people? Something like 31? They couldn't stop. How about more recently? All the high alert security cameras, they couldn't stop that one brother from going on that military base in Texas and blowing up. How many people? A dozen? Wounding 30-something? They couldn't stop that. So the death penalty doesn't do shit. And that's what my purpose was, to walk across, halfway across America, to tell people the truth about the death penalty and try to get, you know, the public's opinion, you know what I'm saying, behind us, behind the abolitionists. You know, not to knock the abolitionists, man, but I was about sick and tired of just sitting at freaking candlelight vigils and going to conferences, talking just amongst other death penalty, you know, opponents. I'm like, we need to reach the youth. We need, you know, because college students, high school students, because they're the ones that really change things, you know what I'm saying? They're the ones that make shit happen. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you can get the elders involved, but a lot of the elders are too busy, you know what I'm saying, working hard, two jobs, so they can maintain that household. So I'm like, you know, we need to reach the youth and everything. And these abolitionists, it's like, to me, they were just moving too slow, you know, especially when I had a couple of brothers that I grew close to on the road, and their number was coming up, you know. I was getting desperate. So when we finally, you know, the abolition movement got the death penalty knocked down in New Jersey, they abolished it in New Jersey, something that everybody thought was impossible. When they abolished it, man, as a symbol, I started right in front of the building where the governor signed the bill to abolish the death penalty, and I walked from there to the governor's mansion in Texas, where Texas, of course, is, you know, you want to talk about the killer machine. The killer machine, that's the engine right there. They kill more prisoners than, you know, than all the states combined.
Right.
So I went, I walked all them miles in protest of the death penalty, 1,700 miles, talking to the media, talking to the people, you know, trying to shift the public opinion. You know what I'm saying? Did it work? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? If I changed a couple of minds, hey, it was fucking working. But I never stopped fighting. You know what I'm saying? I never stopped walking, really. You know what I'm saying? I never really stopped walking because from there, I just continue going to Europe, continue putting albums together, continue talking. Every time I get, you know what I'm saying, press, I'm talking about the death row prisoners. I'm talking about specific cases. I'm talking about the death penalty in general, mass incarceration, juvenile. You know, serving life, I just don't fucking stop. You know,
right.
You can ask my fucking wife, I drive my wife insane because I neglect her, you know what I'm saying, to fight because, I mean, I'm just filled with fucking fight, man. Filled with fucking fight. I mean, if the system right now was a man in front of me, man, I'd bust his fucking ass.
I love it.
I'm serious. I would put my foot deep in his ass. If the system was a man standing in front of me, man. You know,
I love it.
You know, it's like, no, it ain't just about me being beat down and then me being brutalized and me going through 13 years in prison and 25 years, you know, throughout the system between probation, parole, and all that. It's all the brothers that I seen dying there. I mean, they asked me what's the worst thing I ever seen. I mean, to me, goddamn, man, I've seen prisoners stab prisoners to death. I've seen 12 guards mash out motherfuckers where we didn't know if they died or not. You know what I'm saying? But the one thing, man, that wakes me up at night, you know what I'm saying, in a dream, hearing the screams and all that, is when I seen brother hang themselves. You know what the fuck that is, man? A motherfucker hang himself. That desperate, man. So you tell me, you think the conditions in prison are fucking anything less than inhumane?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man.
Exactly. Yo, thanks, man.
I mean, they off themselves in there at a rapid rate, you know what I'm saying, statistically. If you look up the statistics, I mean, they off themselves, you know, more often than they have executions because of the conditions that they put in.
Yeah, you're right, man. You're right, and it's like the same thing with you looked at this past January, just looking at cats that were in these illegal wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. You had more soldiers that committed suicide than were actually killed by so-called enemy combatants, you know, whatever that is. And it's those pressure cookers that America puts people in, and you're damn right. You know, people don't talk about the people, how many brothers and sisters that hang themselves or kill themselves
mm-hmm.
while being incarcerated. They don't talk
mm-hmm.
about how many brothers and sisters that each week are murdered in prison. They don't talk about them because they're almost invisible. You know what I'm saying? Their lives, you know, don't matter. They're supposed to be invisible to the rest of society. Lock them up and throw away the key. That's what they want. You know.
Yeah, I didn't get in touch. You asked me about the prison industrial complex.
Right.
Let me fire a couple of missiles at these motherfuckers.
Yeah, do it.
People don't understand the prison industrial complex. People can't see, you know what I'm saying, how, you know, a profit's being made by prison expansion, you know what I'm saying, and mass incarceration. Try and tell them that, they fucking laugh in your face. Okay? First and foremost, you know what I'm saying, you got to realize they charge the taxpayers, on average, let's say about $35,000 a year per bed, per bunk for prisoner. I mean, some states are lower, some states are higher, so the average about $35,000. Now, keep in mind, it's only about $34,000 to go to Harvard per year.
Right?
That's it, $35,000, you know, per year. So they say, well, it's not really in the judges, the cops, you know what I'm saying, and the investigators, how they create, you know, how they making a profit. It ain't just them. Foremost, yeah, they're getting paid. They're getting paid handsomely. You know what I'm saying? Prison guards make pretty good money. You know what I'm saying? For not knowing read and write. Some of them motherfuckers is about stupid as fuck. You know what I'm saying? And they're making some good fucking money in there. And they'll have one or two guards watching, what, 100 prisoners at a time? You do the math. Okay? But let's go beyond those that is like, that's right in your sight. The prison guards, you know what I'm saying? The police and everybody involved, law enforcement agencies that make money off of crime. Okay? Let's go one step further. You got to remember, prison expansion. So they build in these fucking prisons. Right? What do they need to build prisons? Of course, you need architects that first design these prisons. Anybody know how much money fucking art? I mean, an architect that designed a prison can make $1 million right off. That's how intense, you know what I'm saying, it is to design one of these facilities. Then you're talking about the construction of the prison itself. Okay? Then to maintain it, companies that sell, like, apparel and linens, you know, because you need bedding in there, you need towels, clothing, uniforms for the staff, footwear for the staff, clothing and uniforms for the inmates, footwear for the inmates. Okay, then you need building and grounds maintenance. You got companies that clean the sanitation, facility maintenance, maintenance for equipment. I mean, I can go on. You want me to? Then you got business and finance. You know what I'm saying? That takes a lot of fucking money. You know what I'm saying? All these companies that are after these lucrative contracts to supply what prisons need to function, whether it's, you know what I'm saying, whether it's like commissary stuff for the inmates, you know, because they eat snacks. That right there, you make a lot of fucking money off that. The phone companies, they all go after these lucrative contracts because, man, it's a lot of money to be made in prisons. It's a $1 billion industry. And now that billions go into one little barrel, and you got these companies, these corporations surrounding it, just dipping their hands in that well. You want me to keep going? Communications, computers and technology, construction and design, like I said, the doors, the windows, the electrical lighting, all the entertainment and recreation. They spend a lot on that motherfucking shit, right? The food, the kitchen, putting all the kitchen equipment and making that kitchen equipment. I actually work for a company on the streets where we manufacture the stainless steel equipment that goes inside the kitchens of prisons and of hospitals. We used to try and hang shanks. We used to try and hide shanks in there for the brothers. I don't know if they ever found it, but I hope they fucking did. You know what I'm saying? Then you got the health care and the fucking medical, the insurance companies, all this shit, you know what I'm saying, the plumbers that go up in there. I mean, everybody's got a hand in the till, okay? Then, you know, all these companies, of course, are all on the stock exchange. So if you know what companies are, you know what I'm saying, are supplying these prisons and you bank on the right one, you're going to get paid because that motherfucking stock ain't never going to drop. Especially if you like the law agencies, and the corrections officers, unions, and these corporations that supply the prisons with lobbyists in positions. They're in position to push new laws, harsher sentencing, longer sentencing, all into effect. You see where I'm coming from?
Yes.
So they definitely cash in on prison expansion and the prison industrial complex. I mean, come on, man. The prison industrial complex is only second to the military industrial complex. Hear me now, okay? If the military industrial complex is profits are going down, what do you think they do? They start a fucking war. Boom. They start manufacturing ammunition, bombs, all that shit, planes, right? What happens when the prison industrial complex profits margins going down? You pass new fucking laws, harsher penalties, longer penalties. Go out there, boom, you fill up a couple of more prisons. That's it. We're back. We're back into making money. It's that simple. You know, it's a long list of motherfucking companies, corporations that make money, not just from the prison privatization. That's a whole nother freaking animal. I'm talking about state and federal governments here, the state and federal prisons, the county jails, the jails that for contracts to hold federal INS prisons because they get funding from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So those county jails, man, they be living fat. They be giving all the officers raises, man, smoking cigars. Yeah, man, we got INS up in here because I was actually in a county jail in New Jersey that emptied a cell block. You know what I'm saying? They retrained the staff, which who knows how much that cost them because they wanted to bring in INS, federal prisoners, you know what I'm saying, waiting deportation. Waiting extradition, whatever. They were getting deported. some of these guys, because I used to be free walking around that jail. But that was a long story, but I got to talk to a lot of these brothers, and these brothers were 20, 30 years in, and they was going back to their countries to face execution.
Right.
You know? But that's what the prison industrial complex is all about. It's all about profit, and it's from all the way down from the, like I said, county level all the way up to the federal level. And they making tons of money right under people's noses, you know what I'm saying, because people are scared. They're scared. They see that all this is all these fucking TV shows. Now they got shows that go inside prisons, and they show the meanest brothers with all the tattoos on their faces and all that. And people will be like, damn. So every time a law comes up for, you know, stiffer penalties and shit, they vote hell yeah.
Exactly.
You know, it's a setup. But the truth, the reality is that 75% of the motherfuckers that's locked up, 75% of the 2.5 million that's locked up now, is nonviolent.
Nonviolent sentences.
Yep.
You're exactly right. And when I'm listening to you, man, it's not even the, you know what I'm saying? It's the fact that you're painting such a vivid picture. You're putting things in context that makes it so easy to understand. You know what I'm saying? Just like you were talking about before in that last song that we played. You know what I loved about Fred Hampton is that he was extremely intelligent, but he spoke the language of the people. He was able to connect the dots and to place things in a context that the people that he was leading understood the gravity. And so when you were speaking, man, it was that you were able to paint a picture, which I really appreciate in terms of you explaining what the prison industrial complex was, explaining your stance, you know, against the death penalty, explaining the fact that if the system was a fucking man, you would beat his ass. You know what? I'd be with you right there stomping him down. It would be a double team. It would be a triple team. Like Bushwick Bill said, we'd be dropping motherfucking bees on him. You know what I'm saying? And I'd be there right with you, kicking the motherfucking shit out of him. So
yeah.
I love that passion that you got. And when I hear your passion, it's exactly what we need to do to fight the apathy. And that's a segue to your song called Fight the Apathy, because the apathy in this country is thick, and it's voices like yours that even the most apathetic person has to be waking the fuck up, because your voice is like a slap in the face, like, listen, motherfucker, shit ain't sweet in this so-called land of milk and honey. This is America, you know what I'm saying? And I spell America AMERIKKKA. So
this ain't the land of milk and honey, it's the land of money, that's what the fuck it is.
Exactly. So we're going to play Fight the Apathy. And the other end, Peter has a question for you. We'll roll like that. Here's Fight the Apathy by Capital X.
Mass incarceration, absolute generations, economical enslavement, half the faith and on the pavement. Still not suffocating, they consider that outrage. Friends and family, your readers, like this fuck is just contagious. Afraid of freedom, motivation, comes the pain. It's every time I suffocate, why they vacate into canvas. I have to medicate depressing 40 situations. Men will kill you in the vein is if you show them where a vein is. They'll make you famous, frame with charges that are heinous. Represented by a fucking court-appointed ignoramus. Exonerations after failing with no explanation. Take a decade and a half just to bury information. Human rights and violations, there's no ramifications. Even the United Nations ignores the condemnation. I've been losing my patience, just corner medication. Man, half of them will make it like the Africans will flee. Y'all gotta see the tragedy, be headed for catastrophe. You'll think you're living happily, but need to fight the apathy. They break apart a family, the tide of the blasphemy. You're taking on the enemy. We gotta fight the apathy. We gotta see the tragedy. We headed for catastrophe. I'm tired of the blasphemy. We gotta fight the apathy. We're taking on the enemy, attacking with the tragedy. That was gotta be. Identify the apathy. Man, I'm tired of politicians with the trick of opposition. They're lying to just your face while they're claiming to be Christians. Playing tricks with them magicians. Don't let anyone who listens understand in opposition. They're facing life in prison. I've been set for what I'm spitting as a call for armed resistance. They won't cease to kill until we all think that this is we're in need of resistance. Fuck signing a petition. We need urban gorillas with high powered ammunition. I'm on a mission, holding even benediction. Now I know how Jesus felt when he faced crucifixion. Prostitutes, they're religion. Got my trigger finger itching as the Texas coalition. Fight the strong for best convictions. I stay optimistic, though my fears are pessimistic. Born to raise up in a system that counts, get the statistics. It's just ridiculous, get violent to be violent. But till the seas fire and I'll fight them with these violence. Don't gotta see the tragedy, we're headed for catastrophe.
to fight the apathy, to break apart our families. I'm tired of the blasphemy, I'm picking on the enemy. We gotta fight the apathy, we gotta see the tragedy. We're headed for catastrophe, I'm tired of the blasphemy. We gotta fight the apathy, we're picking on the enemy, attacking with the tragedy. Now it's gotta be. I said if I'd be after you. If you thought that I was playing, you would've heard what I've been saying. We've been talking revolution since the king assassination. It's not the end of talking or the singing and the praying. Especially indignation out of real entertainment. Then against discrimination, higher prison population. Then for better education, that's for rehabilitation. If you get the station, that's a different than enslavement. I don't say this just to say this, or to become rich or famous. We're in desperate need of change. So many need to change. And we got brothers killing brothers. It's like the total strangers. Law enforcement occupation, real heavy. Before containment, and they push to find an ass, guilty by association. They got Freemasons separating all the nations, fulfilling prophecies in the book of Revelation. They love to hate me as they seek a condemnation, cause I fight the apathy with every oral presentation. Y'all gotta see the tragedy, we're headed for catastrophe, you think you're living happily. We need to fight the apathy, we're breaking apart our families. I'm tired of the blasphemy, I'm taking on the enemy. We gotta fight the apathy, you gotta see the tragedy, we're headed for catastrophe. We gotta fight the apathy. I'm taking on the enemy, attacking with the tragedy. This is how I'm trying to be. I'm gonna fight the apathy.
Peter?
Yeah. Oh, I love that song, man.
Yeah, man. You know, I tell you what, though, that's more than just a dope rap. And for the listeners, I want to encourage our listeners to go check out the lyrics, not just that tune, but of a lot of your work, Brother X. Capital-X.com/lyrics. Go check out this brother's music. Go check out these lyrics. You know, this isn't just a rant on the criminal justice system. This is a meaningful, well thought out resistance, and you need to read and hear what this brother's saying. It's not just music, you know, to bob your head to. This is to educate yourself with. So, Capital X, that's capital-x.com/lyrics. Go check out this brother's lyrics. Read what he has to say, and obviously listening to what he has to say right now, but follow up with it and get on board with him. Brother X, I need to ask you about the anti-injustice movement, brother. Tell us about that. What's going on with that?
We're taking AIM, bro. We're taking AIM. Yeah, I was approached by AIM, you know what I'm saying, not too long ago, just recently, and they were asking me to become part of their movement. I checked out their website. I checked out a little bit. You know, there were some things that I didn't fully agree with, but the one thing that we locked in on was all the injustices. I mean, that was it. You know what I'm saying? I felt the movement. I felt what they were doing. I became a part of it. I mean, just come on. Anti-injustice movement. They're not talking about just one. They're talking about all injustice here. Out in Scotland, and they got members. I mean, they're growing like weeds right now. You know what I'm saying? Got U.S. members in the UK, Scotland, whatever. I mean, I don't know where else they got them. Across the U.S., I know there's brothers in L.A. that are all members, and they're using hip hop. You know what I'm saying? Not just hip hop. They're using poetry. They're using, you know what I'm saying, marketing strategies, using any weapon that they can get their hands on. And became a member, and I'll tell you, I'm definitely happy. You know, a lot of different organizations have approached me ever since I started in the movement, you know, fighting against the death penalty and prisoners' rights and human rights, and I have said no, but something told me, yo, AIM? I mean, come on. I mean, just the name and their logo had me hooked, you know, and I even brought it to attention, you know, I brought them to the attention of my homie, my comrade at arms, Monty Smith, street poet Monty Smith, which y'all need to check out, street poet, MontySmith.com. He also is an AIM member, you know what I'm saying, and like I said, they're using every means of media, and, you know, to spread out information and to fight the apathy, so to speak.
That's right. That's right. And they're based out of where? The UK?
Yeah, they're in the UK. I mean, the president and the vice president, which are the founder and co-founder, they are based in Scotland, but they do have members in London. They have members in Norway. They got members in the US. I really don't know where else. I mean, like I said, they are just, they're growing rapidly. They got some really heavyweight talent, you know, rappers, poets, you know, artists, and then they got straight up soldiers. Nothing but help spread the propaganda, you know, because propaganda, you know, is vital, you know, in this struggle. You know what I'm saying? It's very, it's vital. I mean, the Black Panthers was all about propaganda because, I mean, they spend billions of dollars, you know what I'm saying, on propaganda on us. So we have to combat that propaganda, you know what I'm saying, any way we can. And no, we don't have $1 million to run an ad, so we got to do it guerrilla marketing style, which guerrilla marketing style came from what? Guerrilla warfare. Small little groups just, you know what I'm saying, hitting the big beast until we finally get the big beast to its knees. You know? So I like AIM. I like what they're doing. I like what they stand for. You know what I'm saying? And the diversity of the group is pretty amazing. And we're touching a lot of people. We're reaching a lot of people. You know, I believe in what they're doing straight up.
Brother X, you know, that's you said it's based in Europe. Can you, you know, have you experienced any difference in the response or the audiences that you you rap to, that you talk to in Europe as opposed to here in the States, bro?
Well, I mean, my acceptance here in the States has been rough, man, you know, has been rough. It's just, I don't know, I think it's more, you know what I'm saying, what I stand for. Nobody wants to, nobody feel like they want to be preached to or they want to be taught no more. They just want to, they just want to drink their stuff, smoke their stuff, and have a good time, whatever. So I struggled. I mean, started to get recognition slowly but surely after that walk. But the acceptance in Europe, where, I mean, they're a lot more open-minded. And, of course, I mean, I go over there talking that I'm against the death penalty. All the European countries, all our European allies, all abolished the death penalty. You know, and they all pretty much, you know, unite to try and fight against the death penalty here in the U.S. and China and elsewhere. You know, so, of course, I'm much more accepted over there, much more understood. Whereas to over here, a lot of people just look at me as some pissed off ex-con. You know, over there, I'm looked at as a survivor of a brutal system. You know, so it's a little bit different. But the fact that I spend so much time in Europe, which actually I'm trying to move to Europe, I'm like, you know, trying to get residency. You know, so it's going back and forth right now. But, you know, since I tour Europe so much, then people in the States start saying, wait a second, you know, this guy's touring all the time. Look at some of the names he's played with. So it's starting to, you know, get some recognition. And then now the album's dropped. And I put more emphasis on the lyrics than anything. I mean, when I send out packages for reviews or anything like that, I send lyrics with it because that's what's important. And sometimes, yeah, you can't really understand everything I say. I talk fast. I talk street. You know, I swallow words. You know, it's because, I mean, but it's because there's so much information that I'm trying to put into your brain, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, I definitely suggest you read the lyrics. They're pretty easy to follow. There's a lot of information. Actually, on my website, I'm trying to link all the important words. So when you're reading the lyrics, you can just click on them, and it'll take you to, if you don't know who George Jackson is, I highlight George Jackson's name so they can learn about George Jackson. You know, when I talk about, you know, whatever sentence that I say, you know what I'm saying, that's trying to make a point, you know, it, that it's an issue, I highlight it so they can just click on it. And if you Google me now, like, the lyrics are getting around the internet all over the place. So, yeah, slowly but surely starting to get accepted in the United States, man.
Right, and that's capital, that's C-A-P. Yeah, and it's capital C-A-P-I-T-A-L hyphen X.com. You know, definitely go to his website. And is there also, you know, is there an email that people can reach you at?
Yeah, there's an email on the front page, you know what I'm saying? It's 305-375@gmail.com. You know, you go to the front page, it's right there. Also on the front page, y'all can notice that though the CD officially dropped, Tolkien 19th, which is Malcolm X's birthday, everybody. You know what I'm saying? You can buy the CD now in the U.S. and the U.K. You can get the hard copy. In the U.S., you can get it on iTunes. But the rest of the world can't get it on iTunes 19th, and some areas of the world can't get the CD till May 19th. But the U.S., man, support it. You know what I'm saying? This ain't for profit, man. You ain't going to see me driving in a Cadillac, trust me. I mean, I'm going to put food on my table. I'm going to make sure me and my wife got a roof over our head. But then, you know what I'm saying, it's back to the lab to make more music, because there's a lot of brothers in line waiting to get their words spewed out over a microphone, and I'm more than happy to channel that for them.
Thank you. And if I can, you know, I really want folks that are listening right now, whether you're listening live or you're listening to archive a week from now, whatever it is, it's important. What he's saying is, listen, we've been purposely culturally conditioned and cognitively decapitated by these large corporations that have basically, in essence, stolen hip hop from brown and black skinned youth in this country. This is not, you know what I'm saying? So the fact that he's saying that, you know, he can go, you know, he's not getting much love in the U.S. because, you know, he's too deep in this, that, and the other. If you think about it, we've been culturally, so many of us have been culturally conditioned, all right, because we listen to this nonsense over and over again. And these aren't our favorite rappers. When you say, oh, you know, Young Jeezy or Lil Wayne is my favorite, that's not your favorite rapper. That is these corporations. That is Viacom's, or that is Clear Channel. Those, you know, that's one of their favorite rappers that they feel that is acceptable for you to listen to. And so don't think that because so-and-so sells 9 million units or a million units or 500,000 units that's any kind of barometer in terms of their talent. No. They sell that much because they are proliferated throughout this country, and they're played over and over and over again because they understand, by and large, America, unfortunately, is filled with sheep that need to be that they want to lead to slaughter. You know what I'm saying? They want to lead them to slaughter, and so that's why those messages are played over and over again, and that's why you don't hear someone like Capital X, you don't hear someone like Immoral Technique, or you don't hear over and over again someone like Acrobatic. I can go on and on and on, because these are messages of resistance, and it's stuff that will make you, that will condition you to be a critical thinker about where you live, about the conditions that you live in. And so after a while, you won't be seeing America as this land of life and of milk and honey. You'll see America as a place that's got plenty of potential, but it is a hell camp for people of color, for poor people, and it will put you in a position where you want to fight and resist to make it what it should be. To fight and resist, to create opportunities, and to steal that piece of the pie that you are deserved. And so that's why it's important that we support artists like Capital X. That's why it's important that you send this website, you send this interview, and you put and you go out there and you support his music, because that's the only way that we're gonna combat this whole hip hop crisis that we have here. And because his music is giving back, I'm gonna end on that. His music is something there, not just that other stuff that you listen to, whether it's, you know, Chain Hang Low or whatever, you know what I'm saying, you know, Gucci Mane song. That song's not giving nothing back to you. It ain't giving anything back to you. It's not giving anything back to you or your community. And I'm not even going to go hard on Gucci Mane. I'm going to go hard on the pimps and the pushers and the peddlers of that stuff that put that stuff in our communities, because they do it on purpose. They want those messages that Gucci Mane puts out, because he got into it because he felt, you know what I'm saying, the only mold that he could step into that could put him, to make him, you know, a big-time rap star, this, that, and the other, was what he was, you know, what he listened to growing up. And so, yes, he's in many ways, confused, very, very much confused, as most of them are. But it's these pimps and pushers of this kind of music that they put it out there, that we sit there and we accept, because we haven't been trained to critically think and to question this crap that is being put into us. So please, like I'm saying, support folks like Capital X. Support that kind of music. It's vastly, vastly important. And before I get to the next song, Capital X mentioned that one of his comrades, one of his brothers, who I've been lucky to have on this show, and his name is a brother by the name of Monte Smith, originally from North Carolina. He's part of the anti-injustice movement. And I want to play this quick track by this talented spoken word artist called Monty Smith. Listen to what this brother says right here. Key in on what this brother says. And if you cannot, once I finish this track right here, you better be able to tell me, Capital X and Peter, you know, have a better understanding why the fix is in. Once you listen to this, it's very easy to say, okay, now I can see why they don't play this stuff. They don't play this stuff because it had this kind of impact on me, and they don't want this kind of impact being had on tens of millions of youth across this country, black, white, Latino, indigenous, and so forth. So this is Monty Smith. This is one of Capital X's comrades that I met through Capital X. I'm going to play this. We're going to get back to Capital X, and for the next 15 minutes, we're going to let Capital X ride with us and take us home.
It's funny. Every time I'm interviewed, I'm always asked, what makes you write the way you do? Well, I write like I do because John Brown inspired me to, because I'm an abolitionist, because of the no-fly list, because of unjust taxes, because the pigs are still using poor people as target practice, because 9/11 was an inside job, because the School of Americas is still open, therefore Latin America is still open to rob, because the majority of blacks in this penal colony still follow the master's religion, because we're killing ourselves over simple traditions, because James Byrd has been forgotten, because greed is starving our souls, because Babylon is so rotten, because Brandon McClellan's story hasn't been told. I write like I do because the Move 9 needs me to. Because you may be seeking change, but Obama won't free Mumia, because someone raped and killed Sister Rita, because AIDS is man-made, because the CEOs killed Brother Wade, because hate caved in Emmett Till's head, because most whites believe racism is dead, because there's a war against the youth and no one cares, because Curtis Mayfield died broke in a wheelchair, because the mark of the beast isn't 666, it's the cross around your neck, because rap music is under corporate check, because 160 private prisons are functioning in 26 states, because our sanity is at stake, because revolutionary music is under federal attack, because many of you haven't read the Patriot Act. I write like I do because Peter Tosh told me to. Because Western civilization equals white domination. Because manifest destiny has been replaced by globalization. Because no child left behind is a joke. Because the 60s traded revolution for disco and coke. Because resistance is all I taste. Because what's popular ain't real. It's programming that kills, like believing in religion, money, and race. Because my brother committed suicide. Because there's a digital divide. Because Shaquanda Cotton has been forgotten. Because Unicorn is profiting off the poor. Because Babylon is so rotten. Because mentally, mama can't take it anymore. I write like I do because very few are willing to. Because it feels good not to fit in. Because we need more sit-ins, mass rallies, and teach-ins. Because riot police don't wear numbers or names on their uniforms. Because the U.S. has signed over 400 treaties with the Indians and violated every one. Because Bill Hicks is dead and gone. Because when it comes to reparations, it's the same old song. Because no one group can start the people's revolution. Because solidarity is the only solution. Because we live in a world where the darker you are, the more hunted you are. Because I don't like religious nationalism. Fascism is fascism. Because the Coca-Cola and Banadex courts in Colombia are killing union leaders. Because I love my daughter, but it's getting harder to feed her. Because revolution is bloody, and most slaves aren't willing to face it. I write like I do because there's blood in this poetry, and I want you to taste it.
Damn. You know, I just got to say, damn, I've heard that many, many times. Capital X, that's your comrade, isn't it?
Oh, man, that's my man right there, man. That's my man. The hairs on my arms are standing straight up. They're standing at attention like soldiers. Yes, that's my brother right there, man. No question about it. You know what I'm saying? We got two roaring fires going at the same time, man. One on this side and one on that side, and we trying to meet in the middle, man. That's right. What we're doing. We're attacking them from both sides.
Right.
Well, from all sides now with all the AIM soldiers.
Right.
Don't be surprised, Solomon, we come trying to recruit you up in there because you dropped some stuff, especially on the hip-hop tip, man. We may just have to come and recruit you. You're a true soldier, man. You a true soldier, for real.
I go to battle with you anytime, my brother. Like I said, man, if the system is a dude, man, we sitting there and we double teaming him, man. We stomping him out. whip stomping them out in the alley, man, straight up. And so, yeah, I will go into battle with you anytime. Folks that, you know, like you know, mention your brother, Fred Hampton, man, our brother Fred Hampton, may rest in peace, man. He said, you know, he said, peace if you're willing to fight for it. May peace be to you if you're willing to fight for it. And think about that, man. And so that's the way I feel, man. People that are willing to fight, they're willing to get out, you know what I'm saying, in the streets and fight, you know what I'm saying, to bring about a better world, a better and more just, you know what I'm saying, America, you know what I'm saying, because there is no justice in America right now. You know, folks that are willing to fight for that stuff, you know what I'm saying, I'm definitely down with those kind of individuals, and I see you as that kind of individual, somebody that fights to mobilize, fights through his words, through resistance. I mean, you know, fighting is not always physical. Matter of fact, the most devastating and most important battles to you know that one can fight are those that that start in your, you know, in your brain, man. You know, in your heart, in your soul. That's the best kind of fight because that's what moves your body. Even if you get into a physical altercation, you gotta have heart. You gotta have a conscience. You have to have a strong conscience to be able to, you know, to wage in. You know what I'm saying? To battle somebody physically, you know what I'm saying, for minutes, for hours on end. Without that,
that's
right. You know what I'm saying, your body's no good.
I laugh because I'm laughing now because, I mean, a lot of people that see me online and stuff, and then when they finally meet me in person, you know, they be like, damn, you look a lot bigger in video. Don't let the size fool you, man, because I'm like a fucking pit bull. I'm saying anytime I was in the cage and the police came for me, they knew they better come not less than 12 deep, not less. And just to you know, build on what you said there with Fred Hampton, you know what I'm saying, because I love Fred Hampton, you know what I'm saying, I'm going to tie this together with AIM, all my comrades in AIM. I love AIM because, like I said, very diverse, you know what I'm saying, we got black, we got white, we got Latino, they got, you know what I'm saying, Indian, you name this, it's up in there, everybody's fighting, everybody's doing the same thing, and Fred Hampton said, we've got to face the facts. People say you fight fire with fire, but I say to you, we best put fire out with water, okay? And then he says, with that said, he said, you may say fight racism with racism, but no, we're going to fight racism with solidarity. You know what I'm saying? And that's what the AIM is about. It's about solidarity. That's how we got Monty up in there. You know what I'm saying? Because Monty is very, you know what I'm saying, very cautious of what he does. But he saw the solidarity. You know what I'm saying? And that's how we going to whip the system's ass. You know what I'm saying? All the poor people. Let's forget about color. It's, you know, it's about economics here now. You know what I'm saying? We're all economical slaves. So those on the bottom of the chain, you need to wake up and join us. And join us. It ain't about getting wealthy. It's not about all that, man. See, people support those artists you were speaking about, bro, because they want to have fun. That's what they do. See, they trade their freedom for fun. Y'all don't know. Nobody in America knows what freedom is, man. I never knew what freedom was until I started going over, and, you know, over to Europe. Let me tell you something. Here, you walk anywhere that's not your own property, what's going to happen? You're going to rouse, right? Trespassing. Everywhere is trespassing. All the property's owned. If you ain't getting arrested, you're getting shot or beat down. You don't know freedom here, man. You go someplace like Norway where you can go into the wilderness, just walk for like 10, 15, 20 hours without running into another human being, free, like the Indians was. That's freedom. Right. That's freedom, man. Smell that air. To feel that ease, no stress at all. That's freedom, man. We don't know freedom. You know what I'm saying? They trade that in for Gucci, man, to shake their ass. You know,
right.
And all these, and let me tell you something, just to call, I ain't going to name no names, but there's a lot of motherfuckers that be claiming that they this and that revolutionaries and activists. Ain't none of them to me. And let me tell you something, I've went through a lot of them. I'm like, yo, you fighting? I'm ready to fight. Oh, what? Then they walk away. What? Oh, you better than me? You better than me. Are you serious? But let me tell you something. When I was locked up and somebody stood by my side, died with me, like, let's go. I'm ready to die for you too.
Right.
You know? But you turn your back on me? You turn your back on me. What would you think? You know, it ain't like that. It's not a fucking game I'm playing. But all those revolutionaries all you motherfucking activists that's getting paid.
Yeah.
You better invest because if I ever land on the same stage as you, man, you're gonna fly off like them PM Dawn motherfuckers when KRS-One threw them off.
Right. I remember that. Yeah. Set a drift to memory bliss. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, KRS-One did blast, man. He blasted the big one right off the stage, man. And, I love what you just mentioned, man. You said those so-called activists that's getting paid, man. That's right. There are folks out there that call themselves, that parade themselves. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to be an activist, let somebody call you an activist. Let somebody call you an activist. But they parade and they call themselves activists. They call themselves public intellectuals, and they don't do a damn thing to give back to the community. And when it comes time, you know what I'm saying, to fighting, you know what I'm saying, a very important battle that's very political, that might cost them, you know what I'm saying, you know, a job in terms of being a commentator on MSNBC or CNN or this, that, and the other or whatever. They're more wary, man. They're more protective of those corporate dollars that they might lose, you know what I'm saying, if they pair up with somebody like Capital X, if they pair up with somebody like Peter Fowler, you know what I'm saying? They're more afraid of that than they are in terms of, you know what I'm saying, in terms of actually doing what's right and fighting on behalf of something that's bigger than themselves, bigger than you, bigger than me. That it's, you know what I'm saying, that the capitalism is their god. Money is their god, and they worship that, and that's all they will continue to always be, is a capitalist whore.
Yeah, man, they're trying to keep everybody sleeping. Remember, everybody went through the educational system here. You know what I'm saying? That's a whole other animal. But remember, when you're going through the educational system here in America, they didn't teach you how to think. They taught you what to do. All right? It's up to you. Some books, read, and find the real knowledge and wake up and learn how to think. You know what I'm saying? How to think.
Yeah, that's a big difference right there, bro.
Yeah, you got to raise your consciousness, man. Raise your consciousness, man. Get in touch with that inner spirit that connects with somebody that's on the same, you know, wave as you, that could be in another country, but you connect, you know, that kind of consciousness, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm collaborations with cats in other countries, and it's like, yo, man, it's mind-boggling how it's like we throw back the lyrics, we email them to each other, and it's like, man, we like right on the same page. How does that happen, man? Because we're at the same level of consciousness.
Right.
That's
right.
Exactly. Well, I want to say, man, it's been an unbelievable, you know, episode with you, and I definitely want to do it again. Probably before you go back, man, to go back on tour, go back to Europe, man. It's just not even close enough time. And I see that we've got so many listeners that have tuned in actually this evening, man. That's one of the wonders of having a show that's internet based. You can tell how many people are actually listening live. And so, Capital X, you know, if you can give one more time your information to the listeners, so if they want to email you or they want to contact you, if they want to know where to check out your lyrics or your information, please do. Go, sir. Go ahead.
You got to go to Capital X. That's Capital with two X, Capital-X.com. That's Capital-X.com. You know what I'm saying? Also, jump over to my comrades page at www.streetpoetmontysmith.com. Also, hit up www.antijusticemovement.com. You know what I'm saying? And look me up on Reverb Nation. I just signed up. You know what I'm saying? Get on my mailing list because we're going to start sending out some really good newsletters and all that. And, yo, we got time. I could spit some.
Oh, that's the best way to take us out, man. Exactly.
All right, check it. Look, man, I'm tired of lectures and speeches, praying with preachers. I'm calling for suicide bombers running up in the prisons. Call it treason. I call it some rhyme with reason. I tried to be Christ-like but got obsessed by the demon. See, I'm out to get even, dreaming of deadly assaults, riots. For every child, tried as an I'm talking, taking over. Been caught in the full body armor with high-powered rifles. Man, I blast through they black robes, baptize them in extra wounds the size the manholes. Urban commando streets is like death row, delivering death blows. Them devils will reap what they sow. Man, fuck a cash flow. See, I'm looking for change. Hate me now, but you will remember my name when you're being bust up, state in shackles and chains, turned into a sex slave, forced to give your cellmate some brain. This is what it is, full clips and empty holsters. Keep your eyes open, looking over your shoulders. The Terminators, mostly as they motive. Fuck remaining silent, I'm the voice of the voiceless.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
That's all right.
Yes, that was Capital X. Man, this is Solomon on behalf of Peter Fowler. And if you want to reach out to my brother Peter Fowler, that's Peter.
Right there.
that's my co-defendant, man. That's Peter Fowler.
Right.
That's Peter dot Fowler, Fowler at gmail.com, right?
That is a Yahoo, Solomon. Peter dot Fowler at Yahoo.com.
Okay, at Yahoo.com. Peter dot Fowler at Yahoo.com. And my brother, my comrade that was just spitting fire, my soldier in arms, everything, all that was Capital X. And so Capital X, I just want to thank you once again. I know
we got
some folks listening across the Atlantic. Thank you guys for tuning in. Please continue to tune in and send the link to your friends. This is you can take this interview and you can embed it anywhere in your webpage, your website. If you've got MySpace, Facebook, I don't have Facebook or anything like that, but you can embed it in your blog or anything like that. You can just go on to the site, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/yourworldnews. And so you can just go there and just take the interview and embed this interview anywhere that you want. This is a classic. This is a classic interview. So thanks again, Capital.
Yeah, thanks, David. Appreciate
it. And we're gonna go out with Weapons of Mass Destruction by Wise Intelligent. Until next time, this is Solomon for Capital X and Peter Fowler. As Peter says, peace and unrest. And as the great Fred Hampton said, peace. Peace be to you if you're willing to fight for it.
Word.
This is a lesson complete with plans and actions. A combatant of all the weapons of mass destruction. The iced out gems that cost us peanuts in comparison to the Africans that lost their limbs. We're dumb to what's happening with George W. Bush and his corporate American cabinet. The waging of war, which amounts to nothing more than strategic positioning on a global chessboard. The axes of evil, imaginary enemies configured to gain the support of an apathetic people. With war comes spoil. What Afghanistan, Iraq, and Colombia have in common, drugs and oil, lucid commodities. Whoever controlled the two upset the balance of power and influence world economies. Any DJ that want to lose his job will play this. And any MC that want to get dropped off your label, say this. I will not comply. This is what life is. Terrorists have prices to bring about change through contrived crisis. Terror for hire. Freelance extremists who carry out what your government conspire. But this rhyme is not political. It's commercially defective yet extremely critical in violation of the Patriot Act. Because my freedom of speech is being breached and I have a problem with that. George W. and the bush for which he came is rotten. When he started Albusto Oil, his business partner was Salam bin Laden, the elder brother of Osama bin Laden, the two wealthy sons of the late Mohammed bin Laden. Entrepreneur extraordinaire. Now who dropped the put options on United Air? Any DJ that wanna lose your job, play this. Any MC that wanna get dropped off your label, say this. I will not comply. I am slightly less. I might swing on a right-wing extremist. I am an introvert. I fit the profile of a genius. I spit venom. This song, the towers fall before the planes win in them. This song is how the small finance hit in the system. I am a dead man walking. I'm destined for the coffin. Judas has already been paid to stop me from talking. I have never been afraid. I embrace this war. You have not yet lived it till you find out exactly what it is that you will die for. Don't say this, don't say that. Change your lyrics. Everybody's a critic. It's getting kind of hectic. My rhymes are all finished, so they shall remain. My writing exciting and ever mundane. In actuality, my personality keeps my mentality based on real life situations, not speculations, but verbal illustrations of how I feel. Holla. Intelligent music. Intelligent music.